Yo, it's the Breakfast Club, bringing flavor to the game. At the Nordic, don't make days, ain't no one to say. We rockin' suits and ties, making moves.
This episode is sponsored by Escrow.com, the leader in secure online transactions for domain names.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Breakfast Club, the podcast in which we discuss domain investing, life, and anything else in between. Today, we're closing out the year with a special season finale featuring Alan and Braden. We're looking back at the year, biggest wins, lessons learned, and also personal highlights. Alan, Braden, welcome back to the show.
Hey, glad to be back.
Good to be here.
Where are you guys?
I'm in LA.
And I'm still in Boston.
Yeah, Alan, but the last picture I saw of you, you were like somewhere in the Caribbean. So you kind of disappeared for a month. And
Definitely not a month. I like traveling the week of American Thanksgiving because it's typically a slower week just for meetings and whatnot. And so I was in Puerto Rico, which I have to say, normally I'm the type of person I like traveling outside of the U.S. quite a bit. And I used to think people that go to Puerto Rico, it's like a lame way of pretending like you're traveling. But I have repented of that. And I now recognize Puerto Rico is actually a really nice place to go and visit. It has all the amenities of being in America. So you can go to Costco, Walgreens. I didn't see an IKEA Giuseppe, but I'm sure they have. But they have pretty much everything you can expect that you'd get in the U.S. So like, it was nice to be able to be like, oh, I need something from Walgreens and go there. But it still feels like you're in a foreign country from the different food and obviously the language. But highly recommend Puerto Rico. I will definitely go back. I think I'd love to spend a week working from there.
How could you say that it wasn't, you don't really consider it traveling when, like, if you get on a plane and fly someplace and get off the plane and you're in a new surround, like, that's traveling.
I would have to replay this, but I don't think I said it's not like traveling, but I think it's not as exciting as going to like in my mind, I would be like, oh, you go to Costa Rica, you go to Peru, you go to Italy, like, you go to foreign countries, Puerto Rico, it's part of the U.S., so it's not the same, but no, I have learned the error of my ways, and I now have, Puerto Rico has my stamp of approval. They don't have a stamp in my passport since it's part of the U.S., but it has my stamp of approval as a best.
Well played. Well played. I'm not going to give you a hard time because I like that pun.
How about you, Braden? Where did you travel to recently?
My last trip was Dubai and Istanbul, so I haven't been anywhere since, but on my calendar for today, I'm going to book Tulum for next month. Everyone keeps going to Tulum. It's the place to go, and I have never been. So I'm going to go next month. I'm also planning a trip to Costa Rica, actually.
All right, cool. I was thinking today, like, man, I see Braden everywhere. I think I see you like one of my best friends. Wherever I go, you're there. Any conference, anything, you're always there. I think we speak more with you than my parents.
You didn't go to Vegas for the Domain Expo?
I did, but I don't consider that traveling.
If we rewind the clip, Giuseppe, on this, I'm pretty sure you said if you get on a plane and you go somewhere where you...
I did. I went to Domainer Expo. Ishmili puts on a conference each year. It's a small get-together. But it was... I literally forgot that I went. You know, I've been to Vegas from L.A. It's a 40-minute flight from the local airport, and it's so quick. I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times. I go to Vegas literally every couple of months for something, and I oftentimes will fly out in the morning and fly back in the evening if I can. This, I stayed overnight, but I flew out in the morning and late morning, and I came back the next day. So it was a quickie.
All right, was it a nice conference?
Nice. It's a nice group. Yeah, it was smaller than last year, unfortunately. I'm not sure. I think because he just didn't market it as well as he could have, unfortunately. I just didn't see a lot of exposure for that conference. So I think a lot of people just didn't know about it. But it's a nice group of guys.
Anyway, guys, let's dive right in. 2024 was quite a year. And Dana, we'll start with you. Like, what were your biggest wins this year in domains or personally? Anything you'd like to share?
You say me? Yeah, I think for me, as I look back, it's funny, you sent this question ahead of time, and I always try on past episodes to not talk about anything. Like, I try to make this more about just domaining in general and not talk about Afternic and GoDaddy because I don't want to make it like self-promotional. But as I look back on this year, the things that I'm looking back on are the things that I've had my hands in and what I've been doing. And I look back at the last 12 months and the amount of progress that the GoDaddy aftermarket has seen in the last 12 months is greater than any other 12-month period since I've been at GoDaddy. There's been a lot of changes in forward progress. And so even, I mean, from small things to big things, but like afternic.com used to live in the year 2010 and now has had a complete rebrand and update. So it's a lot cleaner. We used to have an old cart system that was the Afternic cart system that buyers would go to. And now we're integrated fully with the GoDaddy cart system, which opens up a lot more payment options, currencies, and it's just a lot better experience for people who know the GoDaddy brand. We completed and did a whole back-end migration of the listing system that manages our listings, did extra efforts on shill bidding, where now bidders have ID verification that they have to complete that really decreased the shill bidding on GoDaddy auctions. Launched lease to own on GoDaddy earlier this year, where you have not only lease to own as it was on Dan, but the ability to pay in any currency that GoDaddy accepts, which is super cool and showing up in the search path. Launched GoDaddy custom landers, so bringing over the Dan landers, allow make offer an LTO on there. Launched Afternic Boost that gives additional exposure. Launched the ability to chat on Afternic. Really, the list just goes on and on. Like I can probably list another 10 to 20 things where it's like, as I was looking back at this year, just from a personal standpoint, the amount of forward progress that the GoDaddy aftermarket has seen this year is greater than any other 12-month period that I've been a part of.
So this sounds like a lot of like tiny optimizations, which, you know, they sound great. If you have to say, like, what is like the biggest selling point right now for people to join the Afternic if they were not listening before, what do you feel?
Yeah, I mean, my biggest selling point would be distribution. The more eyeballs that you get on the domain names, the more likely that you're going to be able to sell the domain. And by listing on Afternic, you're getting the eyeballs and distribution across an entire network of hundreds of partners, and especially on GoDaddy.
Braden, how about you? Any standout wins or any personal highlights?
This year, it's my personal record for amount of sales, not number of sales, but dollar amount. I'm at about 6.5 million in sales this year, which is a record. I mean, I've been doing seven figures a year for a while now, but I've never done this much. And I've got a deal I'm negotiating right now that's the offer is already in the seven figures. He's got to come up more. He's pretty anxious to close the deal. So I think we might get to a deal before the end of the year.
Sounds good. Do you think there's anything that changed in your overall strategy that led you to have this personal record?
Hilco. Hilco's representing a couple of hundred of my names, I think, and they've been doing a lot of outbound work. That and Adam. Adam has closed some deals for me. Some mid six figure deals have been listed in their ultra premium marketplace. So they've done some deals and Hilco's done some deals. And then additionally just more inventory. I've been buying a lot over the last, I would say, 3 years. In 2021, it's during COVID, I decided I really wanted to double down on premium names. So I've been focused on that.
Is there anything that, in terms of names, something that you were buying before and now you're not buying anymore? Or is there something that before you were not as active and now you're focusing even more?
I got my start in legal names, buying names for lawyers, and I've really moved away from that. I don't buy them anymore. Every once in a blue moon, something will come up. But I've not only not buying them, but I'm letting them go. I'm kind of liquidating most of that portfolio. And at one point, I had about 15,000, and I probably 500 now. So, just the best ones. So, I've really brought my portfolio down. Although I've purchased over 150 names this year, which for me is a lot. I mean, I only have now I think less than 1,600 in my portfolio, but about 1,500 names, which is the least amount I've had in many, many, many years. I mean, when I first got into this business, I immediately ramped up to over 2,000, 2,500 names. So this is the smallest portfolio I've had in a very, very long time, just from a number of name standpoint. But of course, the value is much, much higher because most of those names are, six and seven figure retailers.
This reminds me of what Michael Sager was saying about portfolio hygiene. where like there are some domain investors who just ramp up the portfolio, they just play a volume game and they try to just either buy or register as many names as possible. But some of like the top investors like yourself or even Mike Sager or like many others, they're just like very, very careful, like in trimming their portfolio down and just like focusing on premium names. And I think there's a lot of benefits into it. Like, first of all, you have much lower carrying costs. So you're like running your portfolio costs much less. You have to field less inquiries. So there's less work that you need to do in order every day in order like to sell, transfer name and so on. And,
not less inquiries, not less, because the names that I have generate, like, for example, I recently bought rainbow.com and I get, I don't know, 10 or 15 inquiries every day on that. I mean, most of them are garbage. Most of them are looking for rainbow clothing. And so even though there's a lander that clearly says the domain is for sale, people just don't read.
And the domains you're dropping typically are ones that don't have very much interest. So there wouldn't be too many inquiries.
Yeah,
there.
And most of those, some drop, but most of those get liquidated. So they get sold inexpensively. Other investors pick them up because they're decent names. They're just names that I don't want to outbound. So they might sell for between $10 and $300. Other investors pick them up and then they outbound them and sell them for $300, $400, $500. And that's great.
When you want to sell names like liquidation, where would you do it?
I'm trying to think of where we're doing it now. We used to use name liquidate, but I don't think we're doing that anymore. I'm going to tell you. Oh, we are still using name liquidate. I'm just looking at my sales sheet. So name liquidate is one of the places that we liquidate, and we are testing Sav, but I don't see any sales on Sav. And then there's an investor that I work with that he takes the names that I'm not going to renew, and he outbounds them, and then we just split the sale. And I've known him for a long time. I just push him into his account. He has control over him.
Got it. How about you, Alan? Like, if you have to advise like a new investor to where to liquidate the names, what would you tell them?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I feel like most of the investors that I'm interacting with are going to have different quality of names than Braden when it comes to liquidation. So like, I know on past episodes, Braden's talked about some of the, I think like the .NETs that he was liquidating and whatnot. But legal.nets, I think. But yeah, I think most domain investors that I'm dealing with are the type of investors where you're dropping the domain name because there's really not value in it. The average domain investor that's not Braden has a portfolio, let's say, of 1,000 domain names. In that portfolio of 1,000 domain names, there's probably 200 or 300 domains that are just not worth anything to anyone. And so there really isn't a way to liquidate. So most of the people that I'm working with don't have that same issue. It's more figuring out which names aren't worth renewing.
So being able to liquidate names is such an important part of the industry. It's such an important part of like managing a portfolio. And I wonder, like, this is a question open to both of you, because back in the days, the main place to liquidate the names, I think, was NameJet. What do you think it is now, that place?
Name liquidate is pretty good for us. The problem is it doesn't get a lot of eyeballs. So the names don't sell for a lot. You know, they're $10 or $20. Although, if we're going to drop it, I'd rather take $10 over $0, right?
For sure.
Has some sort of market for liquidation too, don't they?
It's a good question. I should try that.
I think they do have some sort of wholesale place that you could probably liquidate. I don't know.
They do, but that's right. It has to be on the platform already, and then it sells for some percentage of the list price. But these are names that they probably wouldn't get accepted on the platform anyway.
Is there any tool that you're kind of developing with GoDaddy that can help fulfill this problem?
Yeah, right now that's not something that, when it comes to jobs to be done and what we're focusing on, making more names sellable that are actually selling to end users and not necessarily liquidating to other domain investors. Yeah, I think there definitely is a gap in the market and a need there. You've seen several marketplaces in the past that have popped up, but I think the fact that we're having problems listing them today might speak to really the demand that exists in that sort of a marketplace.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. DNWE that Ryan Ewan recently bought from the Joshes, you know, that's, you know, domain name wholesale exchange, right? So that's a wholesale marketplace. But we actually, I don't think we've tried it. So maybe we probably should. Or unless Ali has listed them, my portfolio manager, Ali could have listed them and that didn't have success. I don't know. I'd have to find out.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenges of this, and you know, I used, you know, full disclosure, I used to run one, which was LMX.com, which was focused on liquid domains like Flare.com. I think one of the biggest issues is that you have to be very careful about selecting the quality of the names, because if you let anyone just list any sort of domains, then it will dilute that quality. And of course, the buyers who go there are not as interested in seeing names that are supposed to be dropped anyway. So you have to, on one end, make sure you ensure the quality, and the quality should in turn attract more buyers. And that should technically create a marketplace. But it's a tough market, because between domain investors, I think it's a very small industry. Everybody knows each other. So there's a lot of like investor deals happening anyway. So, but anyway, this is like a whole diversion.
Namefind, what we do is we progressively decrease the price on Afternic. So it ends up getting down to $50. And so we know the year before, hey, we're going to drop these 10,000 names and progressively decrease the price. There were thoughts thrown out in the past of, oh, maybe we do some sort of like event auction with that inventory. But I think internally we have a hard time pitching that, because our thought is, if we're not successful with it, we don't want to pitch it on others to say, hey, go and buy this domain name that Namefind thinks isn't worth renewing.
Yeah, but the difference is that, like with my legal names, these aren't bad names. They're very specific. I just looked up one, shopliftinglawyer.com. This is not a bad name, but it's a very specific targeted name, and it requires outbound. And so if somebody can pick it up for almost reg fee from me, then they can outbound it. And if they sell it for $300, that's a good return. And that's what's happening.
I think you have a different level of inventory than the average domain investor. The names that like Namefind is dropping isn't that same level of inventory.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I do think it highlights a problem with the domain industry as we think of domains as an asset. Like any other asset class or most other asset classes, the liquidity and ability to sell is there. I don't own as many domain names as most domain investors, but I have about 250 domain names. And I often think if I ever wanted to sell them all, there's no way currently to liquidate the entire portfolio together in an easy way. Whereas most other asset classes, there'd be a way to do that.
I think one of the best way to look at this, it was probably one of my most popular interviews in written form that was on my blog with Yoni Belousov. And he used to say that domains actually are not assets. He sees them just as $10 a year liabilities. Because if you're not able to sell them, then pretty much you're just spending money on renewals. So you really have to be intentional about what you're buying the domain for, if it has value or not.
Going back to you on that same question, Giuseppe, what's your highlight of 2024?
So for me, like one of my resolutions at the beginning of the year was to enjoy myself more. And just, I was like, the most important thing for me is that I wake up in the morning and I'm just happy to do what I do. And one of the wins this year is that I started to create more content again. And this podcast is one of these articles, one of those. Also, I really enjoy traveling and meeting people in person again, because since COVID, like I was starting to travel less. So for me, that was like one of the biggest wins. Then, you know, I had also other things at a personal level. I did the Camino de Santiago, which was like a big, you know, bucket list item for me this summer, just like the walk basically from, I did it from Porto all the way to Santiago de Compostela. It took me like 12 days. Yeah. Then another bucket list for me was the swim from Sicily to Italy. And yeah, so that's, and just this weekend I completed the Ocean Man, which was another like big goal of mine. So yeah, this is like my personal life. But going away from personal wins, let's start to talk about lessons. Like what are like some things that stay impressed with you this year, something that you learned, something's going to bring with you. And let's start from you, Braden.
What did I learn this year as it relates to domain names or personal growth?
Anything you want. This is like domain investing life, anything you want. You can just keep it PG, man.
Okay, now I gotta start my thinking process all over again. What did I learn? I'm not sure about learning as opposed to kind of a change of strategy, which is really narrowing down, which I touched on earlier, narrowing down my portfolio. There are a lot of names that just, they take forever to sell, and it's just not necessarily worth it. And if I've got a name that I've had for 10 years and I haven't gotten an inquiry on it, you know, am I waiting for that buyer to finally come around and pay me $4,000 for it, or should I just let it go and not pay that annual renewal? And I've let a lot of names go, liquidated them, and I just have less names in my portfolio that I need to focus on. And I think that hygiene is important, because you have to recognize when some names are just, they're just not good names. And people think, yeah, but I spent money on this. I picked it up for $59 and I've been spending $10 on it every year for the last 10 years. But you really have to look at it as sunk costs. That doesn't mean that you're going to get the money out eventually. You may not. Instead of spending $10 on that name, go get a different name that has a higher opportunity, a better opportunity to sell. So I've been doing that. Just I'd rather focus on the high value names, and I'd rather sell a name for a big dollar amount than a smaller dollar amount. It's just not worth it anymore to try to turn these names and get $1,000 or $1,200, and I'd rather just move on and focus on the big name. So that's what I've been doing more of this year.
Yeah, I think that is, it's just being able to let go of names. It comes with the skill of admitting emotionally that you made a mistake, and it's far to let go. And I think that's like a skill you need to learn in order to say, okay, you know, probably this name wasn't worth it. I got to move on. And it's better just for me to let go instead of holding on to it or putting that I will turn this around. What about you, Alan? What was like the biggest lesson?
Ironically, it's very similar. In that my lesson is less is more. I talked about all the things that, or some of the things that we accomplished this year on Affinit GoDaddy. And the only way we were able to make that progress is we focused on doing less. We said, okay, Affinit is only going to be for listing domain names. GoDaddy is going to be for the buying of domain names. And we're able to identify a lot of different areas where we had our engineering org focusing on solving multiple problems, and that was just a waste of resources. And by honing in on specifically what we wanted to do and saying, hey, here's our specific objective and here's how we're going to measure it, it allowed us to actually accomplish more in the long term. And so it's actually very similar to Braden's learning, right? Like, having less domain names often can produce more results. I think it's always worth looking at in life saying, hey, am I overstretched here, whether that be in the number of domains I have, whether it be the activities that I've committed myself to, and making sure that what you're doing is actually focused on the long-term objective.
And speaking of which, like, something I really appreciate about you this year is that I started to see that you were a lot more active in putting content out there. Like, I think a couple of days ago, I saw one of your posts on LinkedIn where you were like showing AI. Also, like, I think you did another podcast interview, and you know, you came, you know, with us in Stockholm, and we did the whole panel. I think that was great, because I think you're one of the smartest guys out there. It's just like your voice was not out there enough. So it's great to see you like sharing more, because like I think you have, you know, a lot to offer.
I disagree. I'm not one of the smartest guys out there, but glad you like hearing and seeing from me.
Well, you are one of the best looking. Yeah. And I think you're one of the most lovable and cuddly.
I'm Braden's teddy bear.
All right, guys.
I'm gonna just want to change your profile to contact information.
Okay, see, guys, before we get to something fuzzy.
I'm gonna change it to cuddly bear.
All right. Hashtag teddy bear. Anyway. So looking at the next year, 2025, just around the corner, Braden, what are some of your predictions for next year?
Okay, I wrote them down. Oh, well, crypto, right? So we've got a spike in crypto, which seems to be holding, at least for now. Who really knows? But, you know, most people that drank the Kool-Aid anyway think that Bitcoin's going to hold at 100 and continue going up. I suspect it will, at least until the inauguration here in the U.S. And then, I don't know. But I get the sense that it's going to hold for a while and continue. And so with the increase of Bitcoin, we've got all the other cryptos have also increased. And so with that, NFTs have then gone up, everything's gone up. With that, we're going to see more crypto companies, whether exchanges or what have you. And so with new crypto-related companies, we're going to see domain names, both domain names for those companies and then people that have crypto and want to diversify into other digital assets. So I think it's going to lead to sales, just diversification sales, as well as naming new companies. So I think that's good. Also, that's going to help the .org sales because we're now seeing crypto companies use .orgs in addition to XYZ. And high value, one more .coms. The conversations that we're having now where companies will reach out and are shocked at the quote, you know, a seven-figure quote for one word.com. Now we see less of that. Now we're seeing high six figures, seven. I mean, I just got an opening offer for a domain that was in the seven figures. And it wasn't enough, but it's good to know that CEO understands that it's a high value name and then he's going to have to pay for it. So I think this is why I like to not have confidentiality agreements in my sales, because I think we should have comps out there. And I know Drew Rosner and other people think that we shouldn't have comps because every name is a snowflake. And I agree that they're snowflakes and they have different values. And there's wholesale and there's retail markets. And so it becomes confusing. However, if we don't have publicly available data, especially at the high end of the market, people don't realize that domains sell for seven and eight figures, sometimes nine figures, right? It's just, if no one's ever heard of it, it's a thing that doesn't exist. And when you quote $5 million or $10 million or $1 million, and they've never seen that, then they think you're just crazy. And so it's good to be able to point to data and to see this publicly available information. It helps sales and it helps kind of anchor values for these one word .coms. And as we get more and more of that data out there, it's easier to make these sales.
Yeah, no, not only that, but also besides for the comps and the value for people who have like large portfolios and big names, it also gives like so much, it's a much higher degree of transparency to the industry. I think we discussed about this with Ivan Raskazov from Estibot in last episode. And we mentioned that crypto was such a small industry compared to domain names, but they completely overtook it. And one of the things that actually crypto has that domain names don't have, it's full transparency about how assets move and how currency moves. For us, domain names, there's so many sales. I think when we were on the panel in Dubai, Braden, you were there. I think you and Monty were saying that 90% of sales are private. And I think it's probably true to a degree for high-end names. For high-value names. And if you think as yourself as an investor or somebody who's just looking at the domain industry from the outside, and does not understand what's going on behind the scenes because so many transactions are hidden, then of course it gives less confidence for new players to come in. And that's what is actually keeping the industry small. Alan, what do you think about this?
Yeah, and Alan, let me add on to that. GoDaddy does not release their sales data. And I would speculate that most, like the most number of sales, the highest percentage of sales are happening on a GoDaddy platform.
Yeah, I wouldn't speculate on that, but I would say that I do see the value in domain sales being published. So when there have been opportunities for people to talk about things like voice.com, it typically GoDaddy in the past has been hesitant to publish because it can impact how investors view their earnings and things like that. But I do think there's an advantage when we do deals with Andrew Miller, he'll often publish the sales that we've done. And I think that is beneficial in the long term. I also agree when we look at 2025, actually, you look at the crypto, you look at the AI sector, there's a lot of startups there. I think overall, whether this is just politics or not, SoftBank's saying they're going to invest $100 billion next year or over the next few years in the U.S. at the press release with Trump. I think there's a lot of positive momentum that the economy could see, and that's going to result in lots of blockbuster sales. I hope they're done in ways that they're publishable, but I would venture to guess and predict there's going to be more eight-figure sales in 2025 than any other year in the past, just based on the current market that we're heading towards is my guess. I think the other thing that that I would predict for 2025 is I think .ai has been slowly creeping its way up on the dollar volume chart. And it's right now number 3 behind .org, so .com, .org, .ai. I think next year it will overtake .org as being the second largest dollar volume extension in the aftermarket. I don't think you'll get there on units, because most of the volume that's being sold for .ai are like one word .ais. I think .org has more value when it comes to multiple words, but I think .ai will overtake it on total volume. And then my last prediction is I think you mentioned this, Giuseppe, about my post this last week. I think AI is really going to open up a lot of exciting opportunities. I don't think we've even seen the potential yet, but an example that I posted on LinkedIn last week is you now have a couple different models where it can watch your screen. AI can watch your screen as you're navigating on the web, as you're using your computer. And that, I think that's going to open up a lot of educational opportunities where you can train your AI on how you think and how you see things. And as a domain investor in particular, a lot of domain investors spend hours a day looking at expiry names is a good example, or hours a day looking at their Excel spreadsheet to find errors. Imagine having an extra buddy that's sitting next to you that's trained on how you think, but is a computer and is always able to communicate, engage with you, talk back and forth with you in a way that you want it to. I think the opportunities really are endless, whether it be from automating processes to helping people educate themselves. And I think we're going to see a lot of change there. I do think that does open up one potential risk, as we see in 2025, is how it impacts search engines. My view is that search engines will be significantly different by the end of 2025. Obviously, OpenAI launched their search engine public this week to everyone, as opposed to just subscribers before. Google is at the forefront of trying to change things to stay ahead on it. How that will impact domains, I'm not 100% certain, but I am certain that oneword.coms become more valuable in that equation, because being able to get people to go directly to your website is always going to be important. And I don't know how the AI search engines are going to handle that, but having your oneword.com will ensure that you can stand out as the cream of the crop.
And you are so much at the forefront of .ai, and we've been talking about this in Stockholm, whenever we talk. So what are the tools used the most in terms of AI? What are the top, say, 1 to 3 tools that you use?
That's hard. For those who don't, Giuseppe referenced, because we've talked about this before, but I spend about an hour every morning. A lot of it is just laying in bed. I'll wake up and the first thing I do is catch up on the latest AI news. So I'm definitely an AI enthusiast. So a lot of this stuff isn't going to amount to anything, but I'm super enthusiastic about everything AI. The top tools that I use is the number one tool that is the most useful for me today is advanced voice mode on ChatGPT. Being able to engage with it really quickly where you're talking to it. Like even, I know Braden, when we went on the tour where we had it give us the tour, in Stockholm, like it's now 10 times better than what it was in May. You can interrupt it. You can have it talk like a pirate. You can have it talk in accents. You can have it speak quicker. It shows empathy towards you. The level of engagement that you can have with it is huge. So whether it's me trying to figure out how long I should put mozzarella sticks into the air fryer for, whether I'm asking about some medical thing that I'm having, or a question about presents of what I should get my nephews for Christmas, advanced voice mode is really good at being able to interact and do things that way.
It's really phenomenal. It's like you're talking to a person. Since that tour, by the way, I subscribed while we were on that tour, as you remember. And I've been using it ever since. I use it every day. There was one time I turned it on and I was about to start speaking and my dog barked. And the AI, before I said anything, jumped in and said, "Oh, I hear bear in the background. He sounds frisky." Like, recognizes the bark, remembers my dog's name, comments on it. I mean, it's really bizarre.
It's so many use cases, I think, that untapped, but just with the where it's at today, like if AI didn't get any better than where it is today, it will take us years to implement all the use cases of the current level of AI technology. But the fact of the matter is it's going to keep improving. But yeah, advanced voice mode, I think subscribing to ChatGPT because of that and a bunch of the other tools, the 011 reasoning model gives you the ability to program and to think through things that you couldn't think through before. The second one, Claude, I think Claude is a lot better. The way that you have to think about AIs is every AI is like a different person. So it's not that, hey, Claude Sonnet is worse than ChatGPT 01. No, they're different use cases. Like if I have a fitness question, there's a different friend that I'm going to go to than if I have a music question, than if I have a medical question, than if I have a domain investing question. And you have to think of the different AI models in the same way. You're going to interact with 01 if you're doing more something logical or programming. You're going to interact with Sonnet if you're doing more marketing and writing. You're going to interact with Haiku if you're a programmer. There's all these different models that are out there, and it's figuring out which ones to use for different use cases right now. I think eventually they'll have a model that will be good at selecting which model's good for your use case. But right now you have to figure out which friend you need to go to. And so Sonnet is my go-to when it comes to writing things. Sonnet is one of the Claude models. I think Claude is really good. I wish they had a voice mode. The other thing that's really good about Claude is the programming aspect. So like I can sit, if I'm bored and on a plane, I can say, hey, write me a game that I can play on my computer that will keep me entertained for at least 20 minutes, and it will program something, and then I'll be able to, oh, actually, you can make it more engaging by doing this, this, and this, and it immediately spits it out, and I'm playing a game on my phone that it literally just created. So I think that would be the second one, OpenAI and then Claude. I've been playing a lot around with Gemini. I don't really like the Gemini models. Like, they have a similar advanced voice mode. It's not multimodal, meaning it's translating it from voice to text, doing the AI generation, and then translating it back from text to voice. Whereas the OpenAI voice mode is multimodal, meaning it's actually interacting voice to voice. Doesn't have to do that translation back and forth. But Gemini, this last week, introduced a lot of cool features. The ability to use your browser and have it watch and talk with you as it's doing it. They a new research mode that's actually, I'm hearing from some PhD people that I'm pretty good friends with, that it does a really good job at giving citations and finding different research items from there. And then they just launched a new 2.0 model. I mean, those are the three biggest companies, but those are probably the most impactful. Then image generation, Midjourney is my favorite. Far and away better than the other models that I've used currently. And then for voice, like, there's a lot of stuff now that I've had it mimic my voice. So if you ever hear me talking, if I ever call you and I shouldn't be calling you, assume that it's not really me. Is it really with 10 seconds of audio, I can replicate someone else's voice that's going to be good enough that someone on the phone might believe that it's that person, much less someone like Braden, who has hours of audio. You could put that into models today and you could accurately mimic his voice in a way that, like, even close friends are going to think that it's Braden. And so use cases for me is if I want to do a quick presentation internally, that I want to just quickly type out the text and have it go through, I'm able to do that and save time rather than having to record myself and worry if I stutter or put pauses in the wrong places.
Yeah, video is coming as well. I actually invested in an AI company that can train AI on a bunch of video and recreate that person's head, face, facial expressions, mannerisms, voice, and you can actually interact. So I interacted with Obama and just Obama talking, and it's bizarre because you feel like you're talking to Obama because he can respond to you. Pretty interesting. Well,
it's probably trained on all of his books and all of his writings, and like, it's probably even pretty good responses too. It's scary, but at the same time, there's a lot of really good use cases.
Alan, since you're giving us a primer on AI, if you want to dig a little deeper, there's a lot of discussion around agents. You want to talk about what an agent is and how they're used. And if you want to go any deeper, you can talk about agent swarms.
Agents is, so 2025 should be the year of agents. And so what an agent is the ability for an AI not to just be by itself, but to accomplish specific tasks. And I will pause here. I am definitely not the expert in this. It's something that I'm an enthusiast on and I'm like super passionate about, but I'm not going to go and give any lectures at MIT about AI anytime soon. But agents is going to really open up from being able to just say, hey, I want to do this thing and have it give the output, being able to have it do specific tasks where you tell it and it's able to say, okay, like, Agent.ai is a good example of this. The founder of HubSpot, he's created a bunch of different agents that do anything from analyzing your website to domain valuation. In essence, it's one AI that connects to other feature sets and knows how to trigger that. And so it opens up the opportunity for not only can AI interact with you, but it can actually do things for you by leveraging other APIs and other AIs and connecting all that. I'm not familiar, Braden, with the swarm thing. It might not be just my vocabulary. What's
so agent swarms is a group of agents working in parallel to accomplish a task. Whereas you've got an agent is, for lack of better words, task trained, right, to handle a task, you could have, let's say, 15 different AIs, all task trained. So there's 15 tasks happening together, but for one shared goal, one common goal, right? So you're combining those 15 tasks together.
I think that leads me to my last prediction, which isn't as much domain related. This one, we'll see if it actually happens in 2025, but you've heard other people talk about this. I wouldn't be surprised in 2025 was the first year where we had a unicorn company that has only one employee. So normally to get to $1 billion valuation, you have quite a few employees. With AI and agents and other things, it wouldn't surprise me. And who knows, maybe we've already done it and we just don't know the company. But if there's several unicorn companies that only have one employee.
Yeah, that is awesome. I mean, that's also what excites me the most. And it's by the way, it's great to hear, Alan, because like you're so knowledgeable about this. One question: How do you stay abreast of all the new AI development?
For me, I follow a bunch of people on Twitter, and so then as a result, my Twitter feed is, if I log into my Twitter feed right now, it's pretty much domain investing and AI. So I'm scrolling through it and it's those two things. And so that does a pretty good job. If I could only follow one person to hear about like more accurate like things, there's a Wharton professor called Ethan Mullick who is really good at talking about the latest and typically gets access to things before everyone else.
I just found one.
Mollick, I believe. There's some newsletters. So I really like Ben Bytes. I think they're on benbytes.co or bensbyte.co.
Dharmesh is also...
Simple.ai.
Simple.ai. So Dharmesh, just to kind of bring it full circle back to domains, Dharmesh is the founder of HubSpot. He bought chat.com and then resold it to OpenAI. He bought prompt.com. He bought agent AI, simple AI, agent.com, and many others. And it's talked publicly about how about domain names. And agent AI does have a domain valuation tool that he built into it. So he's very bullish on domains, and he's been good for us because CEOs, founders listen to him, and he believes in high value domains and talks publicly about it.
Not only believes, but like he actually, the amount of money he spends on them, he puts his money where his mouth is.
I mean, he's the one that divulged that he spent $15.5 million on chat.com for our industry, that he's been out there talking about his seven figure acquisitions. And so it's a good intersection between domains and AI. And so he's got a newsletter that he puts out.
Just something I want to say about like domain predictions. I think it's so true. Like if it's possible right now to have a unicorn that is only like a one person business, having a domain name that actually stands out, it's an integral part of that. So I can see how, for example, from a media perspective, if somebody's looking for news, if somebody's looking for information, maybe the domain is not as relevant anymore because you're going to type in and you're going to talk directly to AI and you're going to get your responses. So you're not going to go on the browsers like trying to find the media outlet out there. But if you're looking at the product and the product has to stand out and the product is mostly AI and it's based on agents and based on a bunch of different technology that is not necessarily human related, it has to stand out with a domain name because you know that gives credibility, gives like legitimacy. So that can actually create a shift in which domains are becoming more valuable and which one are becoming less valuable or less important.
And I would say kind of relating it back, I know we're already like 20 minutes over, but I think it's been a fun conversation. But I think if you're not currently using AI today, just start using it. Next time you want to do a Google search, do a search on ChatGPT 4.0 and start learning how to interact with it, because it's a different way of interacting. It's more human. You're going to interact with it. I like thinking of it as like they're all interns. And so you wouldn't go to an intern and say, Boston weather. You'd go and you'd give specific instructions of what you're looking for it to do. But start interacting with it. Ask it for its thoughts on different domain names. Ask it for what end users might be interested in that domain name, what the overall market cap is on it. Take things with a grain of salt. It still can hallucinate, and you might need to provide better prompting to make sure that it doesn't. But start experimenting with the different AI models and figure out which one is the best use case for something that would make your life easier.
And you can give instructions. You can say, going forward from now on, I want you to give me this information when I talk to you about such and such. So for example, I could say, I just passed this restaurant XYZ. Is it any good? And it'll give me reviews and it'll automatically tell me whether or not there's vegan friendly options, because it knows that vegan. It has instant recall for everything that you've ever said. And so anything, like it knows like my ex-wife's name, it knows my dog's names, it knows like my dietary restriction, it like knows what I like and what I don't like, because all the conversations I've had, it has this memory and can instantly, it's better, like you could do therapy with it.
I found out this week, Braden, that the memory on ChatGPT maxes out. I got an error saying the memory is maxed out for the memories it could store on me. So I had to go through, and it was kind of creepy how many, like you can go through and review which memories it has of you. And I'm like, why is it remembering this random thing from August? I don't need that in there. But I had to clear out a ton so that way it could keep adding more memories.
Yeah, well, that's only a matter of, for $20 a month, right?
Exactly.
And they probably will give you a feature to increase them, right? I mean, why wouldn't they?
Yeah, who knows? It might be in the new $200 model that they just packaged. They did this. But even things like we talk about a real use case of agents. Like Gemini, I like traveling. I was able to say, hey, find me a travel destination in February on a weekend where I could take a 4-day trip for under $1,000. And it immediately came back with those options for me, which was pretty cool. I forget where I did that. It might have been one of the lab versions, but we're not that far away from a lot of things that required a lot of research and knowing specific things about yourself that you're going to be able to have AI do it for you.
Yeah, by the way, like I don't know if you guys ever tried those based on what you know about me prompts and also giving them like some sort of like persona. Let's say like, imagine you're a military leader. And you have to grill me until you get this, and don't break out of character until I say the safe word. And then he keeps asking, and it's so impressive. It's just so, so good. But anyway, guys, like we're almost hitting the 1 hour mark. And I mean, this was supposed to be the season finale, but I'm enjoying this so much. I don't want to take this longer. Anyway, like
season finales are the longest episodes in the TV show.
Yeah, no, man. And I feel like we could go on for like another hour. Just, man, like what a great conversation to wrap up. Anyway, guys, Alan, brilliant. Like, thank you so much for being part of this journey this year. I think it's just been so cool, like, since Stockholm until now to have all this conversation. I wish we could do more. I mean, this is just such a good way just to stay in the loop and stay in touch. And also, I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in. And, thanks from the Breakfast Club community. Okay, guys, any parting thoughts?
I think my parting thought Yeah, I think my parting thought, I think 2024 has been an awesome year for domain investing. A lot of stories like what Braden shared where people had immense success in 2024. 2025, I'm super excited for. I think technology, whether it be crypto or AI or anything else that's coming our way, is going to have a positive impact, particularly on the high end of the market. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for disruption in ways that can optimize our lives and make some tasks that are not as fun to do a lot easier.
You know, I'm really glad to hear Alan's perspective on the high end of the market, because he's privy to a lot of sales that the rest of us are not. And so reading between the lines, that means GoDaddy has sold a lot of high value names this year and it's ramping up.
These are all personal opinions of Alan and are not meant to be any sort of investment decisions or forward guidance.
Yes. Right. That was the fine print. Right. So reading between the lines, this is what I've deduced from what Al has said. Just my opinion.
So we can't close on a disclaimer.
So use your own opinions, Braden. Use your own opinions.
So just my opinion, it seems that it's shared with other people on this panel, that high-value domain sales are going to continue to increase. It's nice to hear other people with that opinion.
Yeah. And I just close saying that I just want to, just my personal intention, just to see more of you guys in person over the next year. And with that, I think we're going to wrap up this episode. And thank you all for being here, and just thank you for showing up.
Holidays.
My pleasure.
And looking for an awesome 2025.
All right. Merry Christmas to you all, guys.